And a very good morning. It's 9:30 here at Sun Sounds of Arizona in Tucson. Mark DeGraft with you in the reading of the Green Valley News for Wednesday, the 21st day of May. Taking a look at the weather for today for the Green Valley and Sweeta area. Currently, it's 84 degrees. And today we're looking for a high of 100 after a low of 64. Sunshine, highs 98 to 102, lows in the mid-60s. Abundant sunshine and winds out of the west-southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, clear skies, low of 64. And tomorrow, mainly sunny and a high of 102. Currently, the humidity is 8%, cloud coverage is 1. Winds out of the west-southwest at 8 miles per hour. And if you're outside, make sure you have water and SPF. Okay, let's go ahead and see what's happening in our world here in Sweeta and Green Valley. His Kansas, Wyatt Earp is a part of Americana. His Kansas and Arizona years were tantamount to his reputation, albeit he spent a great deal of his life shuffling between San Diego, Los Angeles, and the Golden Gate area, gambling, racing horses, and land speculating. His badge-wearing days drew much more attention. Mostly the aging gunfighting lawman's past was hailed, although once, though, it brought him a fistful of trouble. On December 12th in 1896, Earp stepped into a boxing ring in San Francisco. Once again, he was to retain, establish and law and order, this time as a referee for a heavily anticipated prize fight. The only connection between his fight and that of other fight 15 years earlier in Tombstone was the Colt 45 that he carried. A captain of the San Francisco Police Department named Whitman relieved Wyatt of the firearm stuck in his waistband. The disruption was a clear omen of what would unfold that evening. The combatants were a pair of Irish boxers who, given the heavyweight history of the sport, namely the dominance of the great John L. Sullivan, were prevalent in the area. Bob Fitzsimmons, who was born in England, had engaged in a running feud with James J. Corbett, who had famously defeated an aging Sullivan. Corbett was scheduled to face Fitzsimmons several times, but the bouts were canceled for a variety of reasons, not the least of which, Corbett enjoyed the trappings and glamour of the championship more than he cared to fight. He did consent to a four-round exhibition with an up-and-coming pugilist named Tom the Sailor Sharkey, who hailed from the Old Sod. It was called a draw, though most ringsiders thought Sharkey had won. The much-anticipated Fitzsimmons-Corbett fight never materialized. Sharkey and Fitzsimmons agreed to fight. It was confusing to the fight crowd of that area, as no official body existed to declare who was the heavyweight champion. Keep in mind that fighters of that era bounced around at different weight levels, often boxing as middleweights and heavyweights. Fitzsimmons at 5'11", weighing in at 172. Sharkey carried the same weight, but was a stocky 5'8", and Sharkey was 10 years his opponent's junior. What happened after the fighters entered the ring and Wyatt was disarmed at San Francisco's Mechanics Pavilion caused a sensational controversy that drew national attention, replete with contradictory reporting by two opposing Frisco newspapers. A fight was scheduled for 10 rounds. Nearly 12,000 were on hand, and the betting was large on the outcome. The first 7 rounds were give and take. Sharkey had decked twice, and Fitzsimmons was lodging complaints of low blows. And in the 8th round, Sharkey went down again, writhing in pain and curled up on the canvas. Fitzsimmons retired to his corner and was smiling. Earp declared a deliberate low blow and awarded the $10,000 purse to the sailor, was rushed out in a chair to his dressing room. Several doctors tended to him. Others were not permitted. The controversy was ignited. Several papers were quick to pass judgment. The San Francisco Call was decidedly anti-ERP, even claiming they acknowledged the fix was in, citing an unnamed source. Dozens of witnesses were interviewed who claimed they saw the blow. Other newspapers defended ERP and pointed out that the Call had staff and ownership bet on Simmons. The suit was filed and the purse was withheld. Doctors had varying testimonies about the injury, but most recognized bruising and discoloration in the groin area. Endless testimony and cross-examination followed. ERP was a prime subject, and he denied the charge of a fix. The gunfight in Tombstone got him two indictments. There were others, including a bunco charge in Los Angeles, where a man said he was fleeced by ERP and others. Fitzsimmons would continue his career. He finally traded punches with Jim Corbett in Carson City, Nevada. He beat Gentleman Jim, ironically amidst challenges that his last blow was a foul. Adding to the bizarre outcome was the attendance of Wyatt Earp. Fitz died in Chicago in 1917 at the age of 54, and he left a hefty estate. His wife blew the money and then tried to have his body exhumed, no doubt to extract the expensive gold fillings, that is. Wyatt died in Los Angeles in a rented bungalow in 1929, nearly broke. He never got a dime from the book Frontier Marshal that was published in 1931 that established him as a Western icon. The book didn't mention the Frisco fight. Joseph Zukoskis won the belt in 1932. He used the ring name Jack Sharkey to honor his favorite fighters, Jack Dempsey and Tom Sharkey. And Sharkey died at 79 in 1953. Broke. Not a reality. The 60-year-old Tucson man was stuck and killed while changing a tire on northbound Interstate 19. On Thursday, a 70-year-old Green Valley woman trying to change lanes near Papago Road lost control and struck Luis Enrique Del Toro in his vehicle. Arizona Department of Public Safety spokesman Bart Graves said the driver then hit another disabled vehicle on the shoulder. Del Toro was pronounced dead at the scene, and the woman and her passenger were taken to a hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. Santa Rita Fire District spokesman Dan Gonska said Thursday that five vehicles were involved in the incident. Three people were taken to a hospital. He said a fourth person declined transport. Upon arrival, responders found one vehicle on fire, one vehicle with heavy front-end damage, and two vehicles on their sides with entrapment, Gonska said. Crews worked to extinguish the vehicle fire and then extricate the victims from the vehicles. Graves could not account for the discrepancies. Northbound Interstate 19 remained closed until just before 2 o'clock p.m. Well, the town of Sorita seeks input on a failed bond. Proposition 403, the town's first attempt to pass a go bond, received slightly more than 39% approval in the 17,729 votes that were cast. The proposition included $66 million in bond funds for seven projects, including a $48.6 million rec center. The 54,000 square foot multi-generational rec center included aquatic facilities, a gym, multi-purpose rooms, and other areas. The center also had an option for a future 19,000 square foot expansion and was the bond's crown jewel. The projects also covered facility expansion, renovation, and construction, as well as other recreational amenities. The town council planned to add $10 million from the general fund to the $66 million. In May of 2024, the town's financial services firm, Stifel, reported that the $66 million at 5% interest with a 25-year amortization would have cost taxpayers $117,070,500 in total when paid back. The town's 11-question survey asked residents if they were aware of the bond, whether they voted, and if they knew what items had been included. The survey also collects demographic information, including where respondents live in the town. The day after the election, Mayor Tom Murphy and Town Manager Shane Dill told the Green Valley News and Sorita's Sun that a future bond wasn't off the table, with the two calling them another tool in the toolbox. Murphy added it was about the town trying to stay ahead of growth. Sorita has added about 35,000 residents since it incorporated in 1994, with about 2,000 people living within its boundaries. The town has reported 10-year projections will put Sorita's population at about 44,500 around the year 2035. Murphy said Friday that the Buckmaster Show radio program, that there were likely factors contributing to the failure in November, including inflation, rural metro fire pulling out of northern Sorita and leaving many residents with a new tax bill for the Santa Rita district. Part of the town's preparation for the November vote was surveying residents, finding out how much they were willing to spend on a bond. The answer was $17 a month for the median-priced home, and the town requested an amount in line with that. He said they will gather information, will listen, potentially go back out again, but we haven't had that discussion as a council. Murphy did say that if they felt they were getting a green light from the community, the earliest they could go back is 2026, but I wouldn't expect that to happen. Taking a look at police beat, public safety log at 9:42. A Walmart customer forgot to take cash from a self-checkout machine when they remembered and went back. It was gone. A 24-year-old Sorita man was arrested after an officer stopped him for exceeding the speed limit by 30 miles per hour near South Old Nogales Highway and East Madera Highlands Parkway around 10:20 in the morning. A 41-year-old Sorita woman was arrested after Sorita Police Department determined she had tampered with the utility company's device in order to illegally get electricity. And a woman called Sorita Police because she suspects her husband is using her life insurance plan to pay for an apartment. She was told it was a civil matter. Sorita Police helped Pinal County Sheriff's deputies arrest a 33-year-old Santan Valley man on suspicion of sexual conduct with a minor at a family member's home in the 900 block of East Mount Chabel Drive. A South Paseo Quinta called the Sheriff's Department to report their neighbor had threatened them. A West Continental Road store employee called the Sheriff's Department to report a rude customer. A Green Valley resident called the Sheriff's Department to report someone got a ticket in Washington while using their name. And a South Paseo Peña resident called the Sheriff's Department at 6:40 a.m. to complain that a tree cutting service was waking people up. A local assisted living facility called the Sheriff's Department and the Santa Rita Fire District because a 70-year-old man with dementia was being combative with staff. And a Green Valley resident fell for a credit card bill scam, lost $1,500. A West Shadow Wood Street resident called the Sheriff's Department to report their sister had barged inside, started screaming at them. Deputies determined that no crime had occurred. A Sorita resident called police to report they'd fallen victim to a fraudulent IRS scam and lost $13,000. Sorita police received a report about one kid having his shoes stolen while trying to trade his shoes with another kid at Animax Park. A Sorita mom called police to complain that her child's father was violating a parenting plan. Officials determined both had been violating it for months. Waco, Texas police checked on her child, who was visiting his aunt, and the child was in good spirits. A man called Sorita police from the 700 block of West Sorita Road asking for a ride. He was told officers were unable to provide him a ride but offered him medical services. He declined, said he's going to walk to Northwest Medical Center in Sorita. And Sorita police received a call from a woman that said she had been followed around a neighborhood by an unknown driver. Officers learned the driver followed the caller because she had cut them off at a traffic light. Neither driver communicated during the incident. And Sorita police received a call from a man who noticed someone was using his deceased father's credit card. Sarita police received a call about a school employee acting strangely. The employee refused help from the school resource officer. An intoxicated 40-year-old Tucson man was arrested after hitting a locked door at a home on South La Villita Road. Someone locked his cell phone and keys in his vehicle in the room to prevent him from leaving. A Sarita animal control officer was asked to remove a dead roadrunner from a backyard on the North Coastland Court. Sarita police received a call about a missing child around 5:30. The child was found at school. Staff at Northwest Medical Center, Sarita, asked police to remove an individual from the hospital. They gave him a ride home. The Sheriff's Department reported a neighbor on West Camino Tolteca had purposely placed glass shards in a public right-of-way to ward off dogs. Top deputies learned a light bulb had been broken and wasn't causing a hazard. The homeowner called 911 later after a small group began picketing her, complete with a sign to pick up the glass. And after a deputy spoke with her, they went to speak with the group, but they had left. Man called the sheriff's department for help locating his company vehicle after learning the shop owner where he left his car for repairs was arrested for driving under the influence while driving it. Sarita police received a report that somebody had spray-painted several slides and a wall on the park at South Camino Larga Vista. The park was also vandalized the next day. And 20-year-old Sarita man was arrested on suspicion of driving under the influence after being pulled over for a traffic violation near South Camino Lago Azul and South Rancho Sarita Boulevard. Juvenile was also arrested on liquor law violations. An assisted living facility resident called the sheriff's department to say she suspects the cleaning crew stole her jewelry. She's reported jewelry before, but later found it. Cleaning staff was interviewed. And deputies received a call about a domestic violence incident on North La Quinada Drive. The deputies found the parties involved, but no evidence of crime. Sarita police received a call around 9 a.m. about a driver of a Honda Pilot stopping to talk to a child on South Camino Coso and then taking off as soon as they saw the child's parent. And Sarita police received a call from a local resident who insisted people without any eyes or ears or mouths were in their bedroom closet and they wouldn't leave. Caller declined a visit from the Santa Rita Fire District. And Sarita police received a call from an Uber driver who reported finding beads, marbles, a lighter, and unused hypodermic needles labeled used with insulin in their back seat. 9:48 and change here. Bob Liana was born on May 15, 1920, on a farm in Wallace, Michigan, one of five sons. His mother died when he was a year old, and he was raised by his stepmother, Lena. My father remarried after 5 or 6 years. She was a good mother, brought us all up, he said. I lived on the farm with no electricity, no running water. We didn't have no car. A different kind of life. A lot of things we didn't have, but we never missed them because we never had them. You can't crave something you never had. That, except for war, was pretty good. Bob served in World War II from 1944 through 1946, where he was an infantry and foot soldier. He went through basic training at Cam Walters in Mineral Wells, Texas, before he fought in Belgium, France, Germany, Austria, and Czechoslovakia as a member of the 26th Infantry Division. If anybody tells you they were never scared, he's lying, he said. Because a foot soldier in battle, he was scared every night and every day because you didn't know from one day to the next if somebody's going to shoot you. Bullets flying all over it wasn't easy. He was promoted to staff sergeant during the Battle of the Bulge where he commanded an infantry. And he went through basic training. Wait a minute. He was promoted to staff sergeant. I'm sorry. Bob's only remaining family is daughter-in-law, Lola, Liana, and his daughter, Judy. He has outlived both of his wives, Eleanor and Dolores, his son, Marvin, two daughters, Juanita and Lorraine, the latter of whom passed away on April 29th. They're all dead except for one daughter, Bob said. When you live longer than your kids, You live too long. It's something you want to forget, but you can't. What else can you do? Bob spent his 36-year career working in the heating and cooling business in Illinois before retiring to Pembine, Washington, Wisconsin. And while in Wisconsin, Bob bought an island with his brother, Miscano Island, in the Menominee River between Wisconsin and Michigan, where he built a home and lived for many years. Me and my brother bought the island and built the golf course and hotel up, thinking they can make a lot of money, he said. We lost a lot of money and finally sold it to the mafia, so that was one of the bad investments. And he said they didn't realize the new owners were a front for the mafia. It turned out that the nearby town of Cicero, Wisconsin, had a history with Al Capone, and Miscano Island's lodge was used as a vacation spot for the mob. His island days long over, Bob moved to Vista Point in Green Valley, assisted living about 15 years ago at the request of Marvin, who died of cancer in 2018. I led a normal life, he said. You can't call it normal here, but I kind of enjoy it. At 105 years old, and after outliving nearly his entire family, he's no stranger to the common question, what is the secret to life and living a long life? You'll laugh when I tell you, he said. The doctor asked me the same question, and I told him I never smoked, I never drank hard liquor, and I never fooled around with women, he said. You must have had an awful dull life. Well, it ain't been. And while his life hasn't been dull at all, Bob said the world sure has changed as his years have gone by. Well, it used to be a good world, he said. Now everybody hates everybody. I know as a kid we used to enjoy other countries. I had nothing to do with them, but we didn't hate them. And now it's a different world. Everybody wants to fight everybody. I don't know what will happen. I hate to see people live the way they live and hate the way that they hate. There's not much love left in the world. It's not the way it was when I was a kid. That's so true, Bob. I'll be right back. Please stay with me. Little short on the Green Valley news this morning, so I want to go ahead and read an article here out of the Arizona Daily Star. It's the digest from the second page of Nation and World at 9:53. A Virginia man was charged with felony burglary after being pardoned for his role in the U.S. Capitol riot, which included smashing the door panel that rioter Ashley Babbitt tried to breach before police shot her. Zachary Jordan Allam, 33 years old, of Centerville, was arrested May 9th in a neighborhood outside of Richmond, Henrico County, police said in a statement. Officers responded to a call of breaking and entering, where the homeowner and an unknown man came in through a back door, police said, on Tuesday. The man took several items before he was observed by people in the home, was asked to leave, police said. Officers locked the man in a nearby neighborhood. They located him in a neighborhood and arrested him. Also from Washington, Secretary of State Marco Rubio and Democratic senators sparred yesterday over the Trump administration foreign policies, ranging from Ukraine and Russia to the Middle East, Latin America, the slashing of the U.S. foreign assistance budget, and refugee admissions. At a Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing, his first since being confirmed on the first day of the president, Donald Trump's inauguration, Rubio defended the administration's decisions to his former colleagues. He said, America is back, and claimed 4 months of foreign policy achievements, even as many of them remain inconclusive. Among them, he cited the resumption of nuclear talks with Iran, efforts to bring Russia and Ukraine into peace talks, and the efforts to end the war in Gaza between Israel and Hamas. Elon Musk, the richest person in the world and a key financial supporter of Trump, said that he Tuesday that he was spending a lot less on political campaigns, a reversal that could be a setback for Republicans ahead of next year's midterm elections. And the U.S. Senate will act this week to bring block California from enforcing a series of vehicle emission standards that are tougher than the federal government's, including first-in-the-nation rules phasing out the sale of new gas-powered cars by the year 2035. From Maine, a Supreme Court ordered the Maine legislature yesterday to count the votes of Republican Representative Laurel Libby, who was censured after she identified as a transgender teen athlete in a viral social media post. From Mexico, the personal secretary and an advisor to Mexico City's mayor were shot dead yesterday, authorities said, in the worst attack against public officials in the capital in recent years. Mayor Clara Brugada said in a statement, Ximena Guzman and Jose Munoz were killed in the Moderna neighborhood. And the nation's largest public power company, the TVA, Tennessee Valley Authority, announced yesterday that it submitted a construction permit application to the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission for a small modular nuclear reactor. And Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei pushed back on Tuesday after U.S. criticism of the country's nuclear program, saying that Tehran won't seek permission from anybody to enrich uranium and calling American statements nonsense. And from Kyiv, Ukraine, Kyiv's European allies slapped new sanctions Tuesday on Moscow, a day after a phone call between U.S. Russian President Vladimir Putin and Trump failed to produce a breakthrough on ending the three-year-old war in the Ukraine. We made clear again and again that we simply expect one thing from Russia now, namely a ceasefire, unconditional and immediate, German Foreign Minister Johann Wadephul said in addressing the sanctions. We welcome the fact that Ukraine is still prepared to do this. We note with disappointment that Russia has not yet taken this decisive step, and we will have to react to this. Diplomatic efforts have seen little progress in halting the fighting. In a phone call Monday, Putin promised Trump that Russia is ready to work with Ukraine on a memorandum outlining the framework for possible future peace treaty. It appears that Putin has devised a way to offer Trump an interim, tangible outcome from Washington's peace efforts without really making any concessions, said Tatiana Stanyovaya, who is a senior fellow at the Carnegie Russia Eurasia Center. And federal prosecutors allege Democratic Representative LaMonica McIver of New Jersey pushed and grabbed officers while attempting to block the arrest of a Newark mayor outside of an immigration detention facility, according to court papers unsealed on Tuesday. In an 8-page complaint, interim U.S. Attorney Alina Haba's office said McIver was objecting to the removal of Newark Mayor Ross Baraka from a congressional tour of the Delaney Hall Detention Center in Newark on May 9th. I thank you so much for listening this morning. I wish you a very, very good day. Stay tuned for continued programming. Got the grocery ads coming up here in about an hour. Mark DeGroft, thanks so much. Bye-bye.